My guest today is The Writers, and we're going to play a track from their CD, and then we're going to get into some live stuff and some interviewing, as we tend to do. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. This is The Writers.
The devil runs with a smile on her face. The angels can't get rosy. I get the feeling that I'm losing my place. I set it for you and Dorsey. Time the treasures that a picture could be. There are no beautiful goodbyes. There's never a whisper that's coming over me. The pain reminds me of a lie. I've been chasing the dream for so long now. I can't talk about it anymore. Tell someone the obstacle in your life. How do you settle that score? Time the treasures that a picture could be. There are no beautiful goodbyes. Serving a whisper that's coming over me. The pain reminds me of my life.
The Writers on Is Good on killradio.org. And I'm joined by Tom Cusimano of The Writers. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Great. Thanks for coming in.
No problem.
So where are you from? What do you play?
Originally from Vermont, but moved around the country a little bit. I play guitar, sing, do some harmonies, and I did a little piano on the record as well. So.
And tell me about the sort of genesis of the Writers. Did it start as guy and a guitar, and you found other people to fill out the sound, or
the Writers? We actually just counted a couple weeks ago. We've gone through 14 different band members.
Wow,
yeah, it's impressive.
But there's four in the official band now, right?
Well, officially, if you break it down, there's three. But we have this great piano player who just signed on. We're coaxing him in to be full time. But the original Jimmy Olsen and myself. Yes, his name is Jimmy Olsen, just like in Superman. he's great. I've known him for 3+ years. We got together when I moved out to LA. Just like I said, over 3 years ago. And he's just amazing. And, I mean, the inception of the band was then, you know, 3.5+ years ago. And we've just been playing together, you know, through different forms of the band. We've had great musicians come and go. You know, people move away. People want to pursue other opportunities, different bands, go on the road with other bands, that kind of thing. But we really stuck with it. And this past year, we just lucked out. We wanted to make a record. We've done the demo thing. We've got some really good good feedback from some industry and played some great shows all over California. And we were like, you know, we need a record, something beyond a demo. So I started doing some research, and we hit the lotto. We found Richie Podler and Bill Cooper. They produced and engineered so many hits like Three Dog Night, Steppenwolf, the girl from the Bangles, Brandy something, I can't remember her name. You know, the New Radicals, Michelle Branch. You know, they did so much, and they loved our stuff.
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, do you think that's sort of why they gravitated towards your music? Was because you have this sort of classic rock vibe to you that's different from a lot of the up-and-coming indie bands? I mean, you're doing kind of a unique thing here where it's, you know, classic rock but in a modern setting.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, they really dug it, I think, because of that reason. You know, we walked in, they're like, oh, what kind of music do you like? And we're like, oh, we like Springsteen, you know? And I don't think they get a lot of that these days, you know? And actually, they don't do much with new bands anymore. They just kind of got burned out on the whole scene. And they do a lot of independent stuff for, actually, it's interesting, Rob Halford, Judas Priest, and like Alice Cooper, and all sorts of different things. And they just, yeah, they really gravitated towards us just because it was like, wow, we haven't heard this stuff in years, you know. And they worked with like Elton John before he was Elton John, you know, like
right.
When Three Dog recorded Your Song, you know, before it was ever a hit for Elton John. And they're just like, you know, this is great. We're really impressed with the songs. You know, you got a great album here. And they just worked with us for, you know, a few months when we had paid to use the studio for 6 days. So they just, you know, it was their studio. And they're like, no, we really want this. You know, and I was talking
to them. Really went out of their way to help you do this.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And Richie and Bill, they're both geniuses. And they just sit there and they could tell which way I was holding the pick from across the room. Like, no, hold the pick this way, you know, because you get a brighter sound out of your Martin. It was amazing.
Was it strange for you at first to sort of be around these people who had so much experience and been in contact with so many icons?
You know what was interesting is they're just normal guys, just obsessed with music, but normal guys. And they just make you feel so at home. And you end up, you know, you record and then you chat about music and your favorite records for most of the evening. And then the biggest thrill, I think, for me, you know, obviously Bill and Richie were great, and but we also had Rami Jaffe, the Wallflowers, play piano, organ, and accordion on the record, actually. And that was cool, because I remember going to Wallflowers concerts when I was a kid, you know, and just being like, oh my God, that's the same guy.
Wow.
And he was so cool again, just so down to earth, and like I had to let it go, like, oh my God, this guy from the Wallflowers, like, I have those records at home, you know, and he was just a normal guy, played some great chops, you know. He was in there like 12 hours a day with us, you know, just giving it his all. It was just amazing, like the way it all worked out.
Wow. Can we jump into a live song? And
yeah,
then we'll come back and we'll talk about how you got into music in the first place.
Okay, sounds good.
What are you gonna play for us?
I'm gonna do Wasted Heart, which I think you played previously on a radio show.
Yeah.
So this is the acoustic stripped down version.
All right, you're listening to It's Good on killradio.org, and my guest is Tom Cusimano of The Writers.
Here we go. Someone who had meant to stay, same old heart turned the other way. Someone who has been to stay, same old eyes made me want to wear. Someone my mind made me shake, same old felt turned me running scared. Someone who voice made me dream. The empty faces, the window as they come.
So is it hard, is it travels alone, rushing down like a river flow, as a blandness this feeling show. Is it hard, I'll never know.
Describe for me your first guitar.
My first guitar was the one my brother left at home when he went to college. Actually, you can go back even further than that. It was the one that he didn't know I played when he was gone when he was in high school, which was actually our uncle's old Greco guitar. It was this Japanese electric guitar. It looked like it could be really cool and have a great sound, but it was really just a piece of junk. And I used to just hack away on that thing. I used to like to play with a whammy bar. And yeah, it was a piece of junk.
So, but that was the guitar that you learned on?
That was the first guitar that I learned on, yeah. And it was pretty bad.
Did you just sort of teach yourself?
Yeah, you know, luckily, I come from a family that was really into music. My dad was a DJ, and my brother was playing guitar since he was, I don't know, like 10. And I was on the piano from like 7. So the guitar was just kind of always there. Our uncle had played, so he'd kind of left guitars scattered about. So yeah, I just picked it up, and that's how I got into it. You know, just always wanting to know, like, how to do it. You know, I was really into lyrics and that kind of thing. I wanted to be Jim Morrison when I was younger. I think a lot of kids did. And then I decided, like, you know, I should really be able to accompany myself. And so I...
It's probably better for your health that you steer really clear of that.
I was the only 16-year-old with a fifth of Jack in my backpack. I'm sure I wasn't the only 16-year-old with a fifth of Jack, actually.
No, I don't think so.
But yeah, so I decided it was about time to accompany myself. And I lived in a crappy little town in upstate New York at the time, so I didn't have much else to do. So I'd spend like 3-4 hours a night just hacking away, learning just standard chords, and you know, trying to learn some of my favorite songs, like Dylan songs, and just a lot of Dylan, actually.
Was that music in your household a lot?
Environment? Yeah, exactly. I grew up with Dylan, the Temptations, the Beach Boys, everybody, I think, loves the Beatles. You know, my dad was just obsessed with Motown and Phil Spector, you know, Phil Spector pre-shooting people. You know, and I mean, he still made great music. Can't hold that against. So, you know, that stuff was just always playing. I was probably the only kid, you know, like in the 80s and stuff, singing Dion and the Belmont songs. You know, everybody else is like into Belle Biv DeVoe. You know, not that I didn't have that record, but you know, I also had the Dion and the Belmonts record too.
I mean, did you go through a phase where you were keeping up with modern music, or do you feel like music of the previous generation was always the thing that you clung to?
I go back and forth, to be honest with you. I love Pearl Jam. I love the Counting Crows, Wallflowers. When I was a kid, I really loved, you know, all the Motown stuff that they were putting out at the time, which was like is it Belle Biv DeVoe, Boyz II Men, those kind of bands. I'll admit it, Boyz II Men had some damn fine harmonies. and Vogue, they were great. You know, that kind of stuff. I was really into like the modern R&B at the time. And then I got heavier like into like Nirvana and Pearl Jam. And then that led me back to more classic rock. And then I got the Doors. You know, I'd always had Doors records and stuff, but I really got into the Doors. Wore a lot of black, you know, that kind of thing. It was a step away from leather pants.
What were your early experiences playing live? What was the first time you actually got up in front of people who weren't your friends and family and said, hey, this is what I can do, it's a song I wrote or whatever?
The first time, I used to go to this bar called the Time Warp in upstate New York. I was...
That's ironic, I guess.
Huh? Yeah, exactly. And it was a Time Warp, man. It was just a seedy little bar with peanuts on the floor and like a pool table pushed out of the way so the band could play. And these guys would just go up and they'd play blues songs and rock songs and let you sit in. And I was, like I said, I was obsessed with blues music too. And so I'd just go and I'd sit in and I'd write these really junky little blues songs and, you know, play along. And I'd play them, you know, the minor pentatonic, which is the blues scale, you know, as best I could, you know, and people seemed to like it. You know, my voice was terrible. I was still learning what to do and how to be on stage, but that was really the first experience. And the guys are cool, you know, they're like 50, 60 years old. I was 16, 17.
What were some of the things that you learned to do to modify your voice to get the sound that you use today?
You know, it was really just practice because it's hard.
What were you doing wrong, you think, in the beginning?
I think I was trying to sing like other people. You know, I was trying to sing like a Dylan, or I was trying to sing like a John Lennon, or that kind of thing. Whereas I really just kind of had to express my voice the way it works. And it's a little raspy on its own, so I get those comparisons anyways, which I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing when somebody says you sound like Bob Dylan. It's like, do you mean the song or the voice? So it was really from there. I was like, okay, I just kind of have to accept the way that my voice sounds and just work with it. And then, you know, find my own style playing guitar, you know. And that came more in college when I got into, like, Mark Knopfler. And I've since played fingerstyle like 90% of the time just because of him. So.
Cool, man. Why don't we listen to another track from this CD, and then we'll talk about where people can get it and its release and putting it together and all that good stuff. What do you recommend?
Let's go with track 3, Toby's Song.
All right. This is from 200 Miles from Everywhere by The Riders. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Little dog ran just outside my window, just enough so I can't sleep at night. Can't tell if he's a hungry, cold or dying. Don't know if he'll bark or bite. Across the street there's an old woman, she's dying. Stand by the window waiting for her breath to squeeze in. But she wonders what's the use in trying. Think she's waiting for the other half to begin. Standing with my back against the wall, got the feeling it's just at midnight. Wondering when the magic will fall. Turn over, the wind rolls past my shoulder. Lie awake another night in bed. As I lay there, my mind begins to wander. I think of all the things I might have seen. Standing in the middle, watching the moonlight. Standing with my back against the wall. Got the feeling it's just after midnight. Wondering when the magic will fall. See the tears in your eyes, it's a sorrowful bleed. Just a function of a distant pain. Some worthwhile to make my heart beat down over the rising, I'll clear my mind. Take these eyes from me and watch them shine. And it's been so long since our day's been fine. We're here a long way from here to a better time. Step at midnight, wonder when the magic will fall.
The Riders on Is Good on killradio.org. So let's talk first about this album, what it's called, 200 Miles From Everywhere. What do you mean by that?
200 Miles From Everywhere. It's a line from Kalanga, which is the second song on the record. That's a very literal song. I was driving from Santa Rosa, from Santa Rosa, California, which is just north of San Francisco. My dad had a job interview up there. My folks live on the East Coast, so I don't get to see him that often. So I drove up, and I had just gotten this car. It was like a 93 Range Rover. You know, and this is a couple of years ago, so it was an old car at the time. But it was cool. Like, you know, I liked it. I put a little money into it, you know, and I thought it was going to be cool little road trip vehicle, you know, could fit all the gear, everybody fit comfortably, all that kind of stuff. So I drove up, saw my dad, and on the way back, the damn thing died.
Just the whole car just died.
Just the car just died.
And you were?
I was 200 miles from LA, and I was 200 miles from San Francisco, and it was just like 200 miles from, like 100 miles from Fresno, and it was just like, I'm just like 200 miles from everywhere. And so I took it to a shop. Luckily, it died. Like, I pulled into a mobile station as it died. I saw the RPM meter just like do backflips.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God. This is bad. And, you know, the car was, I had it for like 3 weeks. I was so pissed. And I ended up having to camp out there for 2 nights at a motel.
Because
my brother's car was junk. He couldn't come get me. And, you know, these guys were going to fix it, but they had to get the part from Fresno. So they had to send someone to drive there to get it.
Wait, how long did you have to stay there?
2 days.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I'm in a hotel room with my guitar, you know, my notebooks, and I'm just like, oh, this sucks.
Did you at least get some good writing done there?
I wrote Kalanga. I wrote whole song when I was there. And then I came back to L.A., and we had rehearsal, like, the next day or something. I was like, guys, I wrote this song. I think it's really good. And I played it for them. They're like, oh, that is good. And so it became a favorite with all of us.
Speaking of the guys, tell me who's playing on this album again?
On the record is myself, obviously, and then Jimmy Olsen, who's the drummer, Laval Hauser, who's just an amazing bass player, who we came in contact with about a year and a half ago. He's been in the band a little longer than a year and a half ago, actually, because he's been in the band, you know, almost a year at this point. And then Rami Jaffe from the Wallflowers, who's the piano B3 player from the Wallflowers, who he's just an amazing guy and a friend of a friend. And I got referred to him, and so I called him on the off chance, sent him this really, like, long-winded email about like how great our music was and all that stuff, and if he was interested.
You always got to walk that fine line. Yeah. Said you don't sound too modest, but you don't sound like an arrogant prick either.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, you can only kiss so much ass. But he's like, okay, what the hell is this? And he called me like back within 15 minutes. And literally like had the demo songs from the website playing in the background. I could hear it. He left me such a long voicemail that it cut off on him.
Oh,
and then
wow.
He emailed me back with his phone number. And he was just like, oh, my God. He was like, I love it. I love it. Sounds so good. He's like, I want in. And the studio we recorded at, American Recording Studio, is where the Wallflowers did their first record. He's like, oh, I know Bill, you know, the engineer. He's like, oh, this will be great. He's like, I want to go back there. And the B3, you know, he had used it on the first Wallflowers record. It was the same B3 from Steppenwolf's Born to Be Wild and Magic Carpet Ride. So just great equipment, too, you know. It's just a good time.
Yeah, and really good vibes, too.
Yeah,
I mean, spiritually speaking,
yeah,
right?
And just everything kind of clicked. You know, it's like everything in the universe kind of comes together as one. And
were you a little nervous at first? Like, when is the other shoe going to drop?
Exactly. And I wrote a song about it, actually, in June called In Pieces. I'd play it for you, but it's a piano tune. And I don't have a piano here. But, yeah, I was just so nervous. I was like, oh, my God, everything's just going so well. What's going to happen? What's going to go wrong next? And it didn't. And the record came out perfect.
How long did it take you to record it?
We did the major tracking in 6 days. That was it. And then the harmonies, we actually brought my brother in. My brother used to be in the band, and he actually does his solo thing. I'll give a little plug. Michael McGuire, MySpace. He does a solo acoustic thing. He just finished an EP up, and he's just got a great high voice. Like, not like Frankie Valli high voice, but, you know, just great harmonies. And since we're brothers, we kind of had that, like, Beach Boys vibe and that Bee Gees kind of, you know, just – not that we're disco. early Bee Gees weren't disco. He came in, and I remember calling him because I was doing some harmonies, and it was really hard for me to get off cycle of the main melody. And so Richie, he recommended, he's like, well, maybe we should get somebody else. And He actually, he's like, I call Timothy Schmidt from the Eagles. He knows him pretty well. And I was like, oh, that'd be cool. He's like, yeah.
Okay.
He's in London. And I was like, damn. And I was like, how about my brother? So I called my brother. I was like, hey, you want to be on the record? It's like 9 o'clock at night, like 30 miles away from our apartment. And he's like, yeah. I was like, okay, can you come up now? He's like, I was just eating. I was like, okay, now?
You know what I'm saying? You're here because the Eagles weren't available.
But he came up and he nailed it, you know.
Cool.
I think he spent 4 afternoons with us up there and just nailed it. I did harmonies on like 3 or 4 of the tracks and he did the rest. I think there's one song without harmonies. Cherry Sweet doesn't have harmonies on it. And he was just dead on, and just as he always was when he was in the van. And so that was great. Gave it that real, like, just full sound. And because he is my brother, you know, we do have that tonality within us, that timbre that kind of works, you know. So the two of us just blend so well. And, yeah, I was just really thankful that he was on it, too.
When was this released? Just recently, right?
Officially, yeah, just recently. We got it up on iTunes just over a month ago. So The Riders on iTunes. Search it. And then it's at Amoeba as well. So we've sold a few copies over at Amoeba, and they have some copies in their rock section.
And you're having a big release party soon as well.
Yes, this Saturday. We're having the official CD release party. Obviously, we couldn't coerce Rami to give up his day job as an in-demand session player.
So he's not going to be able to play with you.
No, he's not going to be playing the gig. Hopefully he'll show. I don't know if he's in town, though. But we have this amazing keyboardist, Kevin McKeever, who's done a lot of touring and stuff. And he actually, the name escapes me, who he used to play with. But apparently they used to have Billy Preston on the record. And he was used to, like, covering Billy Preston parts. So he told me that on the phone before we even had him in there. I was like, okay, that's great. So you'll be fine. And he gets in there and he covers the organ parts and the piano parts. And so live, it's just so full. And he's got a great harmony voice, and so does Laval. And so we make all the harmonies work live, and we're so excited to get out there. And this is our first show out, and God, I've done a few acoustic things, but this is our first, you know, show out since like last September. So it's been a long time coming, because we spent so much time, you know, trying to get everything together for the record, and now we're ready.
Nice.
So cool. At the Mint this weekend, a Saturday night, 8:30 at the Mint on Pico.
Is there a cover?
There is. It's a $10 cover. If you just go to our MySpace, there's a little flyer right there, and you can just print that out. And yeah, it should be great. Cool. CDs will be on sale.
You wanna jump into another live song?
Yeah, I'll do another one. I'm gonna do Sunday Letter. This is it's a bit of a longer one, but I think it's a fun song.
All right, you're listening to The Riders on Is Good on KillRadio.org.
You will.
So this is what you had to do. As my eyes beheld the truth, but it's all been laid to rest. Your true sides have shown their very best. Now I have to say, no other way. It'll have to be thought. All that's left to trade in is one more sweet smile. One more farewell, one more goodbye, and I wish you well. And the simple advice is, don't tender those thoughts now. One more farewell.